But we have a couple of generations of women who are just flipping burnt out. Mm. They've just had it. They've had enough.
What I like to say to not women, to men, to everyone, is weight loss, if that is the goal for a woman or for a man, that is just part of the journey.
I've tried this. And the doctor says something like, well, it could be fibromyalgia. And then the patient goes, oh my goodness, that sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. How amazing would it be if the doctor was able to say, you know what, let's talk about some breath work.
Yes, mm-hmm. Babies do. Mm-hmm. Then we leave it behind because yeah. Why do we leave it behind?
Well, you know what's funny about that? We get told, stop being a baby.
Yes.
Stress we cannot avoid. Mm. We cannot stop. We need to adapt to the stress and have like a stress management.
I don't want to be sick when I'm older.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I'm okay to die.
Yeah,
but I'm not okay to be sick.
That's a good one.
Me too. Hello and welcome to تحت الهواء مع سبا عودي. أنا سبا. A lot of change, and I do hope progress, has taken place in recent years in women's health and fitness. From the way women exercise, to the role hormones play in our bodies, to how we age. There is a new way of thinking. A new way of thinking that a lot of the things that we, us women, had accepted as our destiny, or as the way that we are made and built, these things do not need to be that way. And that we can have more control over our bodies, if we want it, and if we keep up with the science. Here to bring us all up to date, I am very grateful to have here with me Dr. Heather Eid, Dubai's favorite naturopathic physician, and also Ivan Cherkovic, co-founder and managing partner at I Am Health and Strength. Good. Hello to you both.
Hello, thank you.
Hello.
Good to have you both. Heather, Ivan, what are women's main concerns for their health nowadays? I will tell you my main concern.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It is that women are grossly underrepresented in health research.
Definitely. That's a huge topic right now in medical research. And it's actually astonishing to hear some of the statistics around it, that we really don't have that much data that's been founded purely on women and unique studies on women. That's really only just emerging in the last 15 years or so. So yeah, lots of changes ahead, and there have been lots of changes already in the last 10 or so years, just in what we know about women's health.
But what does that mean in the way that we tackle day-to-day movement, day-to-day nutrition? Have the trends changed anyway?
Yes, just to add actually the value what Heather was saying about the woman, when we did a little bit of research about the app users and related with the fitness app, that most of the fitness app users actually women. Mm. So I think trend is changing like a deeply background which we are not aware of. And definitely, you know, the approach to the woman health, it's not coming only from the health, but also coming from the fitness itself.
Mm. I know I'm changing in the way that I think about how I am.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think just as women, we're used to a certain amount of change. And that's certainly true as we get older. Obviously, men also change as they age. But I think that it's an opportunity as we get older to understand our bodies in a new way. And to me, it's been really valuable to have people around me that are very supportive of those changes. You know, I've known Ivan for a long time. Mm-hmm. Ivan has seen me through all kinds of different phases in life and is still there as part of my journey.
So you see me as well.
Yes. And I don't know, how many years have I known you?
I think it's a 7 to 7 years.
Yes, but I've known Heather longer. Yeah.
True.
I think I was one of your first patients.
Yeah, that was back in the day, back in my MediClinic days.
Yes.
Which I think must have been definitely over 10 years ago.
Oh, for sure.
More like 12 or 13 years ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wild.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
We were so young and crazy back then.
Yes. I'm still crazy. Young, not so sure, but yeah, crazy. That's me. But seriously, I came to you back then because I was trying to find new answers, different answers to the way I can deal with my body, deal with aging. Because at that stage, I was, you know, in my mid to late 40s, and I just needed, I was looking ahead and not wanting to start falling behind. So I sought you, and then I sought you. Mm-hmm. So just to get us started on... what are the main things that a woman needs to look at as she ages?
Yeah, great question. So I'm seeing more and more women coming to me for preventative purposes. They're interested in understanding the aging process a bit better. There's a lot out there now on social media about how to not just age normally, but to sort of reverse the effects of aging. And, you know, at first with I didn't like the term anti-aging medicine because I don't believe that that's a true word. You can't actually reverse time. I like the term longevity medicine a bit better because that term describes what we're all striving for in living a long and healthy life. But definitely I'm seeing more women now asking me about hormones, how to understand their hormones, whether or not to take hormones, what the safety issues are and what the benefits are. I see a lot more women interested in cardiovascular protection and neurocognitive protection as they age. So there's a lot more conversation around heart disease and dementia in women that is, I mean, it seems obvious that we should have always been talking about those things, but we used to talk about them in much more general terms and not terms really specific to what's unique in women in each of those areas.
And a lot of the time, of course, the answers, the cure, isn't always from a bottle or a pill, but it's also
That's right.
in how you approach your life.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. From my perspective, because definitely it is more related with the movement and exercise, actually fitness wise. Exactly. Yeah. The aging, it's one of the biggest fears for women, but not aging from some kind of subjective perspective. It's more about the changes during the life. That's after delivery, because the hormonally we responded completely differently. Actually, women responding completely differently. Then usually we've seen trend the women around 40s when they're already achieving the peak of their careers, because most of our clients and my clients are very driven and successful women. Around 40, they're already reaching the stage where they're comfortable with their jobs. They're successful enough. They have families. Or they're like a feeling fulfilled in that sense, and they're ready to take the step to take their about themselves a little bit more. But also there's extreme cases. For example, when we have like a few clients when they went to menopause quite early in 41, 42, which is again dramatical change for women. And there's a lot of threats behind that. Also, I think preventive approach, like Heather said, is actually now more present than before, especially last 10 to 15 years.
Let's be clear. Preventive doesn't mean you prevent aging. Aging is happening. Time is going.
Aging happens. Yeah. But I definitely think the ideas around aging are changing very quickly. And I notice it even when I'm talking to my own family members. When I talk to my mom about what aging means to her, It's a completely different set of ideas to what just one generation later we're talking about in the frame of aging.
Is that because she's at a different stage in her life, or is that because she's from a different generation?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a generational thing that she, like a lot of women her age, didn't have the access to information that we have now at the time that she transitioned through menopause, for example, or at the time that she was going back to work after having children, right? We have so much more ready access to information, and we have more data, more research about women than we did back
then. Now, that's good, but that also can be not so good, because as they say, a little information is a dangerous thing.
Can be, yeah.
And if you read information and misread information or misunderstand information, not everyone is a physician, not everyone can understand. And the fact that it's everywhere, on social media, on this and that. I mean, I'll give you an example. I have dry eyes, so everywhere I looked on my phone, on social media, over the internet, use cod liver oil, the other one.
Vitamin A, fish oil.
The oil, castor oil.
Okay.
Castor oil. So I got castor oil, organic, pure, I don't know what, and I got castor oil and started putting it on my eyelids the first 2 days. It was fantastic. Yeah. And then my eyelids started to get flaky and I didn't develop an allergy to it. The simplest thing, the most natural thing, but that...
You should have just called me. Just text me next time.
Next time, of course. Well, anyway, so a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. How do you get around that?
No, that's I love that you gave that example, because I'm sure Ivan is the same, that we deal with this all the time in what we hear from our patients and clients, right? I mean, I don't want to badmouth anyone, but I mean, the whole celery juicing thing. I mean, you cannot find a thing of celery anywhere in Dubai now. Everybody is celery juicing. Mm. And the number of people that I've had come into me with very serious IBS and serious diarrhea, but they don't want to give up their celery juicing habit because somebody said on TikTok or whatever that it was a good idea. That's one example. There's many more examples. I think maybe... I mean, I'm joking around a little bit, but I think maybe more seriously, there's a lot of misconceptions around women and fasting, for example. Mm. And a lot of the original research on the benefits of fasting was done on men. And lo and behold, women respond differently to fasting and intermittent fasting. And I've seen it in my patients where this idea of intermittent fasting seems great. You know, eat whatever you want, but just in a set number of hours per day. And it helps with weight loss and blood sugar regulation, heart disease prevention, et cetera. But in women going through hormonal fluctuations, it can really aggravate that change. It can raise cortisol levels, which then has a downstream impact on estrogen and progesterone regulation, serotonin regulation. So women do have unique needs when it comes to an idea that's at its core a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. Changing our eating habits to benefit our health, right? Mm-hmm. And again, that's something that there's a lot of sort of social media information out about, but not necessarily, it's getting better, but not necessarily so specific to women. Right?
Yeah. So it's good to get the information, at least to get some food for thought and then to go and dig and but also to talk to the experts. Mm-hmm. Men are different, women are different from men and different women are different. Yeah.
Or I'm sure you have this where women say they don't want to weight train because they don't want to get bulky.
So yeah, this was... Yeah, absolutely.
I think we're dealing with these trends of social media on a daily basis. In my case, and you're probably on an hourly basis, because people coming with, sending us different videos, sending like a different information, and sometimes a little bit cruel, saying, yeah, good, you send me research about that. Because it's not possible to believe it to everything. If you start to believe in everything, like you said, little information can be very damaging. Mm. So like, for example, I was having the one client, he was asking me, he came to me with the dislocated shoulders. So we finally fixed dislocated shoulders, like we're strengthening and everything. And after that, he was asking me, I would like to go now for handstanding. Mm. I was like, but why? You know, and he heard like, oh, but it's cool because I like it. You know, I heard it's like strengthen my shoulders more. I was like, no, things are not working. So there's a lot of information where people literally are guided by like celery juice thing, you know, because I know, for example, one of the professional athletes who is drinking celery juice because he's a vegan, but he's a top athlete. And then again, they think everything is the same for everyone, for men, for women, for any kind of activity you do. Yeah, but the trends are changed since we're talking about modern woman thing in the 1980s. Yeah, since Jane Fonda introduced like aerobic exercises and everything was based on aerobic exercises, this is where step aerobic, it was very popular at some stage, but now the trend, it's completely different. So now explanation of the strength training and gaining strength in terms of muscle mass and performance becoming now very important for aging itself, like we were talking about.
I would really like to talk a little bit about that, because I was being given a tour around this fabulous new gym in Dubai, and I was with the gym manager, but also the owners of the project, and then the gym manager said something, and I said to him, you know what, I can deadlift my weight, and you know, feeling very proud of myself. And then the gentleman, the owner, turns to me and says, why do you do that? That really bulks you
Be
up.
Be careful.
Yes, that will really bulk you up. You know, you don't want to. So different exercises affect men and women differently, obviously.
Yes.
But that is a misconception, right?
Is it?
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. And I get this a lot too, that the data now is very conclusive about women and weight training, that certainly over age 40, I should say with a caveat that when we're talking about body composition and body fat percentage, weight loss, that kind of thing, the two things that are absolutely critical for women over age 40 are weight training and protein intake. And the number of people that I hear, and I know Yvonne hears the same thing, who say to me, I don't want to weight train because I'm going to get bulky. That is a complete misconception. That does not happen. And I'm not going to eat more protein because it's bad for my kidneys. Protein in the diet does not damage the kidneys. If there was one misconception I could dispel and never have come up again, it's this myth that you cannot damage your kidneys by eating protein. If you have kidney disease and your kidney function is not well managed, then you do have to limit your protein intake.
Yeah.
But you don't get the kidney disease from eating protein, right?
Yeah.
So these are the things that we hear that are starting to turn around now, in part because there's more information about it on social media. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing now these Instagram videos of women lifting weight and they're doing amazing and they're all perimenopausal or postmenopausal. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to have good role models that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's still these myths out there about, you know, getting too bulky. And I mean, you can deadlift your weight and you're not bulky. Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, I'm not.
Yeah, the fear is it was actually huge, you know, for women that happened. But by default in nature, like we know that women and men are having different amount of, first of all, fat and muscle mass. It's by default, by gender thing. And that is something what it cannot influence. So if even if women exercise the same, if that is possible to exercise like a same amount of weights lifted or sets or exercise same like men, they cannot have the same muscle mass. Even using some kind of stimulation in terms of supplements or even worse steroids, it's very difficult to reach that. The most important thing for women to know, and I will to simplify this, the more muscle mass, like in a sense of muscle mass, is creating ability to burn more fat. So that's like a quite simple to say. Of course, there's a lot of things behind how that is working. But also that there's a misunderstanding that muscle mass itself, it's like something make you bulky. If you compare 1 kg of the muscle mass and 1 kg of the fat, the volume, it's completely different. So it's like you take the one finger and a hand. So this is the 1 kg of the muscle mass and 1 kg of the fat. So if you explain that to the people, it's like, oh, okay, but I thought it's an opposite way. Yeah. So,
and is all fat fat? I mean, can you burn all kinds of fat? If you're building, you know, you're weight training, you're building muscle, are you burning visceral fat?
So first of all, there's no targeting, it's to target exactly area. What's happening in the practice, I don't know if Heather can confirm that, is the usual where we gain the first, we lose that in the end. One of the indications how that is happening, usually we're gaining weight around the waist. Usually that's where visceral fat is like a storaging. But also sometimes when you're trying to explain people to know if they're losing the fat, sometimes you can just touch it with the finger. If it's like a too hard, that means you still didn't start to losing your let's say a visceral fat around the stomach. We become a little bit like a softer. That's a good sign. That's already start to melt.
I want to touch my stomach now. It feels a bit soft, to be honest.
I'm not going there. Yeah. What about you mentioned protein, but people take it the other way, and then you have people, you know, on keto diets and. What do you think of keto diets?
Yeah, I have nothing against a keto diet. And there's really good research around being in ketosis and mental health. So there's been really, really interesting studies about reversing states of chronic clinical depression with a ketogenic diet. There's been well-documented research around managing epilepsy with a ketogenic diet. Reversing schizophrenic symptoms on a ketogenic diet. So to me, that makes a ketogenic diet very medically relevant. Now, does a person need to be in ketosis to lose body fat? Absolutely not. Does a person need to be in ketosis to balance their hormones and their neurotransmitters? Absolutely not. Some people feel amazing on a keto diet. They feel better than they've ever felt. Super alert, sleeping amazing, moods totally stable and dropping weight. But other people feel like they want to kill someone when they're in ketosis.
Yes.
That's been my own personal experience on a ketogenic diet. I definitely lost body fat, but mentally I could not tolerate it. And I know about myself that I am not someone who's insulin resistant, that my insulin levels stay very stable. So when I go into ketosis, my insulin levels drop too low, my cortisol levels go up, and that makes me feel really agitated. And eventually, if I was to keep it up long enough, probably weight loss would really plateau because of the high cortisol. So understanding a bit the link between something like ketosis and what our hormones is are doing is very important. Understanding the role between insulin and cortisol and what that does to our neurotransmitters is also really important. But definitely, yeah, the idea that you're going to somehow experience a better result with weight loss by being in ketosis isn't necessarily true for everyone. Yeah. Lots of people achieve amazing results with weight loss without ever being in ketosis.
And I can also say the same thing about me and intermittent fasting. I enjoyed it for a while. I managed, I should say, for a while. And I was very pleased with myself doing 20 hours of fasting and 4 hours of eating. But then it started to drive me crazy. I couldn't handle it. Yeah. When I'm hungry, I need to eat.
Yeah.
I have to eat.
And that's okay.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Say it again.
Yes. Right. No, I think also that some of these, I mean, you know, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but I do, you know, I talk to a lot of women about weight loss, not as a topic in and of itself, but as part of their general well-being. A lot of women mention it to me as one of their health-related goals. And I always bring it up in, when they mention it to me, I always talk about it in a larger context. You know, what does it mean to you to drop weight? Why is that important to you? What does it mean in terms of your all over health? How much do you want to, those sorts of questions, how much do you want to prioritize it? But the idea that we need to deprive ourselves of food in order to achieve something that's important, I think is an important gray area psychologically, that I think a lot of women are conditioned at a very young age that thinness is valuable. And we get this psychology around food that we aren't allowed or that we're going to be punished or somehow not quote unquote good if we have food. And that it's amazing to me when you start talking to women about this subject, how many very intelligent, high achieving, amazingly successful in multiple facets of their life, women still have this core belief that they need to value themselves or judge themselves around how they're eating. And if there was one thing that I could just take away, you know, take out of the female consciousness, it would be this idea, because it results in women feeling like they need to deprive, deprive, deprive in order to have the quote unquote success of weight loss. And we know also from, not only does that, is that hard on us psychologically, but that also totally backfires physiologically, right? Yeah. That too much deprivation does the opposite, slows down our metabolic rate, makes us gain weight. And that's why so many women have faced this cycle of being a bit yo-yo dieting in terms of what they're trying to do with food, but also yo-yoing in terms of their mood and how they feel about themselves because of this conditioning around food, right?
And when women are not that successful with managing their food or managing their weight, do you find, Ivan, that they take it out on, they try to compensate by overdoing it in the gym?
Well, rarely, because I wish it's like that, that can be like a reverse motivation for a woman. But like Heather said, the problem about the dieting and weight loss, first of all, I think I'm born in the 80s, but also through 90s, I become aware of the trends in the world. So all the models and all magazines and medias was around skinny models and were like, they're literally like a hangers for the clothes. Yeah. So it was really looking unnatural. And then young generation women in that age were like growing like that, growing up, becoming adult, and considering that is something how it's supposed to be. So, and then they need to change the trend. And then there are so many diseases behind that, which is actually related with the psychological and, of course, physiological issues like anorexia, bulimia, which no one didn't talk about. They were just talking and mentioned that like extremes, but nothing happened to me. So the idea behind the weight loss, why women are something going in these extreme diets, like Heather said, there's like it's called basal metabolic rate. So if woman is spending, let's say, 1,500 calories per day, and they will go to the restrictive diet, for example, under 1,000, that's usually extreme, like the 700, which is quite damp. But yeah, there is extremes.
Yeah.
In 3-4 weeks, she will lose for 5 kg, mainly water, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then because it's not possible anymore mentally to sustain that, like you're both mentioning that, they will go back to the same one. And body, what is remembering? Metabolism is shrinking. I need less food than before. And you suddenly going back 1,500, and that's classic your effect. You're gaining even more than you had before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So changing the mindset and the understanding, okay, you're not supposed to be skinny. It's the first thing. There's no direct relationship with the health at all.
You're not supposed to be that skinny.
That skinny, exactly.
Me, it was an important little bit of information that women, you know, when I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, where, you know, some of our most popular celebrities, female celebrities, had six packs, right? Mm-hmm. And that was like a desirable thing for a woman to, mm-hmm. you know, to exercise and lose enough body fat to get a six pack. And that was seen as like the epitome of like fitness and well-being, right? Mm-hmm. Well, to achieve a six pack, most women have to be very low in body fat. And in some cases, low to the point of it harming them, right? Mm-hmm. So I've had patients that have gone through this where they've gone after this goal of, you know, having abs and being able to show their abs. And then, you know, their periods stop, mm-hmm. right? And then it's sort of, well, why, you know, they'll come to me and say, oh, there's something wrong with my hormones because my period is, what can I do to get my hormones back on track? And I'll say, you have to gain some weight. Mm-hmm. And then that's terrifying, scary. Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They've worked so hard to get this low because of some completely constructed ideal that women should have a six pack, mm-hmm. when to achieve that for most women, it means going to a body fat percentage that's too low to be healthy for them.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. the pressure, the mental stress that the woman is now under. Yeah. Started mm-hmm. with stress, and you're coming all the way around again to being even more stressed than you were before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about stress relief.
Oh, yeah, that's mm-hmm. a great topic.
Yeah. I used to take 2 Panadols when I get a headache. Now I go into the gym with Ivan.
Yes. And it's a different kind of headache.
I meant training. I meant to get to the point where training takes away the headache.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me why that is.
Yeah, the first about stress, I learned something from Heather. Like, I think you're telling to a few of my clients when they're coming to you that stress we cannot avoid. We need to adapt to the stress and have like a stress management. So one of the like first things in my job is physical activity. And I say physical activity, I don't like to say only strength training, because strength training is just part of it. So what people need to know regarding that, like you both familiar, is, and what I'm trying to achieve first, is to know and to for you to recognize how you feel, you know, how you breathe and how you move. So this is something what is like a crucial to really feel better later. But we need to start from zero. So we cannot come in training and start from 30%. We need to start from zero. So we try to explain, and I'm trying to explain people, that if you want to train and you want to exercise and to feel better, however you come for training, not stressed, sleepy, we need to start from zero. So zero, it's then we're building up to 100. And again, you both remember, like, and then you lie down on the end of the training at the mat and say, let's go for recovery breathing.
That's
so this
part.
Is again zero. Yeah. So we're going for the spike to up and down. So, and also we need to stress you out as well during the training. Mm-hmm. So we need to like stimulate different systems in our body. We need to stimulate nervous system. We need to like adrenaline to start to firing up, cortisol as well, mm-hmm. but also for short period of time. This is very important part. When cortisol mm-hmm. is too high and for too long, or adrenaline is too high too long, this is where we're going like in overtrain, in injuries, and also like lot of physiological, difficulties and like issues later.
Yeah.
So we need to know when to position each exercise in a certain period of training.
Our lives didn't only cross in your clinic, and then later somehow we both had the same personal trainer, but we also met in an ice tub.
In an ice bucket.
Ice bucket.
Siba and I. And Yvonne also.
Yeah.
I go to the beach. There's the ice bucket and there's Heather in it.
with a big smile on my face.
Yes. Yeah. Very inspiring. Very inspiring. Beautiful experience. I love it.
Yeah.
I do love it. I know that you're more regular than I am.
Yeah.
So what does it do to you? Tell me about your state of mind before, during, and after.
It is absolutely the most psychologically altering thing I've ever done in my life. And I've done a few things, but this experience with the ice bath, I mean, the first thing I will say about stress is that to me, when I met Ivan, it was with a very specific purpose in mind around recovery from an injury. And then once we did the injury recovery, it was around health and fitness and that kind of thing. But the reason I keep up with my workouts and try to never, ever miss is because of my mental health. And there is nothing at all that helps me manage my stress levels better than my workouts. Nobody will ever take that away from me. Mm-hmm. The second best thing that I love is the ice bath. And when I get in the ice, it's a description. The only way I can think to describe it is that your brain just empties out. It just gets quiet. Yeah. Everything gets quiet. Everything just settles. And then you don't even really feel the cold after a while. You just feel this deep inner quiet. And then you get this, this reinvigoration afterwards that just makes you feel alive in a way that's so palpable. Mm-hmm. And the very first time that I did it, well, Ivan was there. Mm-hmm.
Remember.
I had some kind of crazy panic response, mm-hmm. which is not so uncommon.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then that led to this, you know, of course, anything that I find physically very challenging, I want to just keep doing it until I feel like I have some mastery over it. And then I would say my second time, I just felt this incredible euphoria afterwards that really lasted for days. Hmm. So since then, it's also been a core part of my sort of self-care. Mm-hmm. And it's easy.
So you've noticed a change, or have you noticed something alter within you, not just during the sessions or right after a session, but over time? What has that done to your mental health?
Yeah, I would say it's helped me a lot. I think the combination of regular exercise and doing something like the ice bath, this sort of cold exposure, the combination of those two things has helped me with focus and concentration, has helped me with better sleep quality. I was having an issue around that time with sleepwalking.
Oh, wow.
And the ice bath really helped me with my sleepwalking problem.
How interesting.
That was a really interesting thing, right? I'd love to see some research on that, because as a kid, I had a bit of a sleepwalking thing, and then I kind of grew out of it, but it came back in my early 40s, which I spoke to a colleague about it at work, and he explained to me that that's actually a known phenomenon. They don't know why, but in women, there's a little uptick in their sleepwalking after age 40. They think it's hormonal, but there's been no research to prove why that is.
Brain in overdrive?
Yeah, something. But then something about the combination of just regular exercise and ice baths really helped with sleep, focus, concentration, and I would say productivity at work, and also just in my normal life.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. You know, let me put this to you. Some will say that you need to be, you know, we're talking about exercise and cold immersion and several other ways. We'll talk about breathing in a minute as well, to manage stress, to become more mentally healthy. Mm-hmm. Mentally healthy. But some will say that you need to be mentally healthy to get out of the door, to get into your trainers, to get into that ice tub.
Do you know, the word I like is resilience.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, I agree.
So it's not about being mentally healthy or mentally unhealthy, because we all have days where we feel great and we all have days where we feel absolutely crap, right? Mm-hmm. But when we get used to training on a regular basis, when we commit to a certain number of times per week or whatever, when we face getting in the ice. Nobody stands in front of a bucket of ice and wants to get in.
No.
Mm-hmm. It's awful. Mm-hmm. You stare at it. It's terrible. Your whole body just says, no, I don't want to do this. getting up at 6 a.m. for a training session. Yeah, it's very rare for me, even though I do it all the time. It's very rare for me to get up at 5:15 and say, oh, yeah, woo, good, yeah. Here yeah. we go. No, it's hard, right? Yeah. But in yeah. doing that hard thing over and over again, we build this feeling of resilience. Mm. And there's not only is it a feeling, the data that we have around regular exercise and regular cold exposure mm-hmm. also shows us that we build a physical resilience. It helps with our immune system. Mm-hmm. It helps with neurotransmitter regulation when we are exposed to a stressor. Mm-hmm. It helps with hormonal regulation when we are exposed to, it helps with blood sugar regulation mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. we're exposed to a stressor. So there are biological changes that are measurable mm-hmm. around this idea of resilience mm-hmm. that happens when we commit to continually doing mm-hmm. something that is physically very difficult.
An amazing point. Yeah, that's resilience, the first word. Yeah. First word, which is coming from like even training ice bath, whatever is it, like a challenging enough. There's a very interesting comparison I actually read about that. When you put the body in training, so you have increased heart rate, which is going in some kind of abnormal like numbers. You have a higher temperature. So there's a cold working temperature. There's a multiple changes. What's happened, which you complete is some kind of disease, like a fever. So actually you are in sort of out of comfort zone with a high heart rate to tolerate, with a higher blood pressure to tolerate, and with the higher temperature to tolerate. Mm-hmm. So if you think from that position, who would do that?
Yeah.
You know, but we are doing that intentionally to create resilience, not to lose fat or some, no, to creating resilience. And then everything starting from there. To connect all the dots, what I like to say to not women, to men, to everyone, is weight loss, if that is the goal for women or for a man, that is just part of the journey. Yeah. Just part.
I think that's
it's
the
not
nice,
the main goal.
That would be a nice offshoot. That would be a nice reward.
Yeah. Exactly.
If somebody was looking mm-hmm. to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
That should not be the target when you go into the gym.
Mm-hmm.
That should not be your target when you do whatever you do mm-hmm. by way of physical. For me, the ice bath is a mental exercise. Mm-hmm. I started going into the ice bucket because I wanted to be able to handle work problems, to be able to think more clearly about work problems, to be able not to run away from issues that I have, whether in work or relationships or anything like that. So it was all up here.
Yes.
I was putting my body through that stressor. And then when you overcome it, when you come out of the ice bucket, for example, 7 minutes later or five minutes later, or however many minutes later, you feel, I can overcome that. Then I can definitely overcome the next big stressor that's going to come my way.
We talk about 0 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 0 degrees, apparently, 0 to 4 degrees in the ice bucket. So if you just think, I think we spoke with our, I think, friend, old friend Benoit.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, showering with the 10 degrees like temperature, it's more challenging than being in the bucket for like 3 minutes and under 0 degrees, which is true.
Because it's running water.
Yes, yeah. Running water,
So. The thing to me also that's really important about it is that, you know, ice, it's a great leveler, right? So you can get a group of people together, all different backgrounds, all different fitness levels, all different ages, all different health-related goals, all different medical backgrounds, different stages health-wise, and you're standing in front of that ice bucket and you're just all in it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nobody that's getting out of it easy, right?
No.
There's nobody that gets in there and has an easier time than somebody else. And to me, the other part of doing the ice and training that's been so beneficial health-wise is just the feeling of community and the creation of community and how that makes us feel like we're doing something, like we're having an experience that's meaningful when we connect with other people because we have something in common and we're doing something in common that's difficult, then suddenly you're bonded to that person, even if the only place you ever see them is at ice bath or at the gym or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So that's another thing for our well-being community.
Definitely.
And knowing that you are one of many and knowing that you have the support of many when you need it and that, you know, whatever you're going through, you're not alone. All these things come into, you know, helping us stay healthy or become healthy. In that way, I'm listening to you, and I'm just thinking. The opposite side of that is when we go into the gym and we're training, you go into the gym and you're training, whether by yourself or with a trainer. Mm-hmm. That's something that you're doing just for yourself and mm-hmm. on your exactly. own. Mm-hmm. And you're on your own. And you always say to me that, you know, there is a lot that you can either buy or other people can do for you, but getting fit is the one thing that you only you yeah. can do for yourself, right?
Yeah, that's one of the rare things in life. And maybe you can say maybe one or two things in life you cannot buy with the money. You cannot buy with anything in this world with the bitcoins. It's to be fit, you need to earn that.
Mm. Yeah,
true.
It's like there's no magic pill. I think so many people would like to have a magic pill, but it's not possible. So this is something we literally need to learn and to earn.
To learn and to earn it.
Like on a daily basis, like Heather said, like from the way how you sleep, how you hydrate yourself, how you eat, and when you eat.
Yes.
Yeah. How to control the stress, how to actually accept that stress and to be actually your trigger for change or something to benefit you, and how to exercise. And these things are they're a sort of pillars of the well-being overall. Mm. And being in community, like Heather said, and you, Sibo, as well, it's building that teamwork, belonging for human beings is very important.
Yeah. Mm.
Very, very important. This is why even if you talk about the personal training, you need to have an ally. You have someone who will keep your back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is idea behind. If that you're not feeling in with your coach, or even if coach don't feel with the client, they're like,
okay, doesn't work.
That's always, it's fair to say, okay, this is not working.
Yeah. I'm sure you've had different trainers in your life. I've had many, many trainers in my life, and I can vouch for that. The rapport between while you are working in the gym for yourself, but yes, definitely you need that good rapport with whoever is there.
Even if, when I'm not in good mood, I'm still supporting you, by the way. Yeah, just
let's talk about that.
Should we talk about Ivan's mood?
Let's talk about
definitely those 6 a.m. sessions. It's often a bit, it's a bit rough for the first 15 minutes.
Acceptance is an interesting one, and awareness and acceptance of how you are, how you're feeling that day. I drag myself to my gym training sessions or to the ice bath or whatever. But you know, being aware of how you're feeling at the time is key to bringing yourself along to the next level or next stage. How do you, away from the gym, how do you bring yourself back to the moment? Talk about mindfulness a little bit. Talk about how you calm yourself down, leave work behind and start at something, start looking after yourself.
Mm.
What do you do?
Yeah, great question. There's a couple of breathwork exercises I really like. Box breathing and something called 4-7-8 breathing. They're very basic breathwork techniques, but they involve breath holding.
Mm.
And there's something about the working the diaphragm while you're doing that type of a breathing exercise that is very grounding, right? So that is something that can be done, in the moment that I try to remember when I am feeling a bit overwhelmed. Lately, I moved. And since I moved, I can walk back and forth to work. So walking home from the clinic takes me about 30 minutes. Okay, the weather's nice right now. But that is, I had no idea how grounding that would be after a work day and how that helps me just sort of leave that behind and not take it into my home space.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a couple of hobbies. I like to read, and I also, I'm a bit of a journaler, and I find that to be also helpful. But the journaling thing is kind of interesting because there's been times where I feel like, I'm sort of a driven person, so I feel like the journal has to have a purpose, but that's not really where the benefit lies, right? The benefit can lie just in describing an object on the table. There's something about the exercise of just letting the words come out onto the page, even if it's something totally mundane and not deeply analytical about anything in particular, also really valuable.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
What about, I want to hear about Yvonne's.
Okay, I need to go now.
How do you bring yourself into the moment?
Yeah, definitely I'm I'm someone who which philosophy is I'm trying to transfer to the clients is like acceptance, how you feel. And like you both know, I'm really curious how someone who is with me in that hour or in the room, if that is private or professional, personal, professional, I like to know how people feel, because it's easier than for me to describe myself how I feel. So acceptance is about accepting how I feel in this moment. And it's for me, again, going back to training, starting from zero. I don't want to skip that. So start to say, okay, if I'm feeling sad, that's okay. I need to start from there. If I'm feeling like a happy, I need to start from there. I'm thankful for that feeling. But overall, it's few routines. I think what I'm recommending to everyone is related with, yeah, the breath work, walking, swimming, walking next to the beach. That's something like next to the sea. It's very valuable. So everything what's related with, you know, you being good with yourself. For some people is reading. I don't like social media. Because especially in the evenings, so I'm not recommending using phones like at least 1 hour before the bedtime, because it can be like overly stimulating. And listen to music. Mm-hmm. Listen to music. You know, there's this thing like if I'm feeling sad, I will listen to sad music. Mm-hmm. I will let it go. Yeah. If I'm feeling good and I can energize, I will go for another one. So I don't want to ruin my feeling of doing something completely opposite. Yeah, so I'm having it my own routine. So I think everyone have their own. Yeah, if I'm feeling sad, I'm not listening happy music. I'm fine just to like let it go, this feeling to go away, and then I move forward.
You go with it.
Yeah. It's hard way probably, but
I want to circle back very quickly to because we started talking about women and women over 35 and how the things that affect them and all these things that we talked about today. I think. I don't know why I feel they're more pertinent to a woman's because of the stresses that a woman finds herself under, whether it is in her personal life or in her work life. Would you put a lot of this down to hormones? So it has roots in physiology.
Yeah, there are definitely roots in physiology. But I will say that the data supports this. And I think a lot of women just through their own experience will describe this. The sort of the terminology is going to sound a bit archaic, but the sort of liberation of women has resulted in obviously women having educations and careers and opportunities like they didn't used to have. But the reality is women are still doing most of the family work and most of the housework, right? So what we have now is a couple of generations of women. My mother was a career woman. But we have a couple of generations of women who are just flipping burnt out. Mm. They've just had it. They've had enough. So. And then they get to age 35, 40, 45. They come in and they're like, oh, Dr. Heather, I think my hormones are changing. And I'm like, oh, okay, what makes you say that? Let's talk about that a little bit. Maybe you've done some lab work. Let's have a look. But what is actually going on in life, right? And okay, there's an element around hormonal change that's important. But a lot of women have just had enough. And I see that driving women in some very positive ways, right? They're under the best circumstances, they're understanding that feeling, and they're using that as a springboard for self-care. And they're setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, no, I'm not going to keep doing this. I want something else for the rest of my life. I want something else out of my elder years.
Yes.
And I want this to change. And the change starts with me.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then they're doing things like they're taking their fitness seriously, or they're spending more time with their friends, or they're, you know, more and more women finally are quitting alcohol. When now we understand the benefit or the risks of alcohol consumption. Mm-hmm. Whereas we've sold this idea to women for the last 20 years that they should relax with a glass of wine. You know, it's a terrible idea, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I see is more and more women setting these boundaries for themselves that are resulting in positive physical change. But then also other changes in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. And hormones are a part of that. You know, I'll get couples coming in, and the woman, she's had it up to here, right? She's ready for change. She feels tired all the time. She feels overwhelmed all the time. And then the husband will say, oh, it's her hormones.
Yes.
And I'm like, be careful right now, because this isn't going to go well for you.
Yeah. And I had that in my workplace.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, sure.
I'm just being emotional. I'm being hormonal.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's such a catch-all, right?
Yes,
that's such an easy way to just dismiss what the woman's human will is and human desire is, right? So yes, there's this element of hormones that's important, and certainly a woman can have everything else in her life balanced, and then when progesterone levels start to drop, things start to change a little bit for her, right? And then we take a look at that, right? But does the conversation always start with the hormones? Well, it's a good sort of icebreaker, but we can't ignore the other parts of the woman's life that influence how she feels on a day-to-day basis.
We're getting the sign to say that we're near the end of this unfortunate conversation.
Like we just started.
Exactly. But you mentioned, let's help women understand what's going on. Let's give them that springboard. I asked Ivan to write 35 tips for women over 35 on how they can, you know, live healthily, well, and fit. For whatever reason they decide they want to do it. I know I do it because I don't want to be sick when I'm older. I'm okay to die. But I'm not okay to be sick.
That's a good one.
Me too.
I want to have a strong body to fight illness when it is going to come, not if it's going to come. Because we all know it's going to come. So Ivan gave me a list, and without, not in any particular order. The company name is I Am, of course. So everything starts with I Am. I am sleeping 7 to 8 hours. Sleep. Just give me just a quick idea on each one of these.
What, for myself?
Give advice to women. It is 7 to 8 hours.
That would be amazing. 6 can be okay.
Yeah.
7, okay.
Do naps, naps in the count. Weekend compensate?
Mm-hmm. Naps count.
Yep. Nap 25 minutes, 30 max nap. Not after 3 p.m.
Not after 3 p.m. I know when and how to say no.
Yeah, I think that's a skill because so many people don't know how to say yes to something. So it's easier time to say no, which is a direct indication that what you want, actually.
Yeah. The only time I'm not allowed to say no is in the gym.
Extra set.
or in the ice.
Extra set.
My job is my passion. I read something, Jeff Bezos yesterday, I was reading, says that you don't go out and find a passion. Your passion finds you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I do think that that's amazing for people who have it. I have it, and I consider it a probably the biggest blessing in my life.
Yeah.
But it's okay to find passion in other places and still enjoy your job.
Rewarding feeling of helping others, it's my passion.
I am sad sometimes, and that is normal.
I said yes.
I know how to calm myself after an upsetting experience.
Yes, this is what I'm trying also to do to myself, but also I'm trying to learn other people to do that.
It's very important that we calm us. You know, self-soothing. Babies do it.
Yes.
Babies do it. Then we leave it behind because why do we leave it behind?
Well, you know what's funny about that? We get told, stop being a baby when we try to self-soothe, right?
Yes.
But I have this story from my childhood where my brother and I both had security blankets. Lots of kids do. My brother's older. And my parents, when he was 5 years old, they made him take it out to the garbage bin and throw it in the bin. And it was obviously upsetting for him, right?
Surely.
And then when I became the same age, they swore that they would not do that to me. That it was so upsetting for him that they would let me keep mine. I still have it to this day. And there were so many times during my childhood where my parents were like, aren't you going to give that thing up? Why are you being such a baby? Wow. But it's like a core part of, I don't know, I look at that thing, I feel better, right?
Yep.
Because that's one of our, that's how we learn to self-soothe when we're infants, I agree. Right?
That's very interesting.
I am exercising a minimum of 3 times per week. What's the threshold? What's good, what's not?
Well, it's not good to overtrain and it's not good to undertrain. So 3 times, it's something what is good for start. Usually I'm recommending with a 1 day break in between.
Cardio or weights?
Well, weights. Our combination, actually training, doing both at the same time, it's possible as well. How? I cannot tell you now.
I didn't realize until I started working out quite intensely that power is what we lose. And power is what you get back when you are actually weight training.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Yeah. You get back the power.
Yeah.
I am aware of what I eat and when I eat. How important is timing?
Timing can be very important.
Because I like to snack.
Yeah, and snacking is not bad, right?
Please tell them that. Tell everyone. Tell the world. I love to snack.
No, snacking can be... some people are grazers, and that's what works for them, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people need to eat in the morning, or they feel grumpy all day. Some people can go until noon without needing to eat. Everybody's a bit different, right? Mm-hmm. It's just about finding whatever rhythm works for us.
Mm-hmm. I know how to breathe, and that's something that I'm passionate about as well, because I discovered breathing techniques. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that I don't breathe. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I used to think was my fibromyalgia, I don't have fibromyalgia, but I thought, that I was told in the past that my aches and pains, you know, are not explainable, therefore let's call them that, fibromyalgia. But it's actually, I'm not breathing regularly. I'm not breathing. I'm holding my breath. I'm a stressed person. I'm not... exercising enough, and that's coming out in...
Well, that's normal when we're in a sympathetic state, when we're in a fight or flight state, right? And many of us have, you know, jobs and lifestyles that put us into that state. So to get out of it, we have to... It doesn't just happen on its own. We have to do something, right? But how amazing would it be if when people end up in the orthopedic specialist's office or in the internist's office or the GP's office saying, oh, I have all this shoulder pain. I don't know what to do. I've tried this. And the doctor says something like, well, it could be fibromyalgia. And then the patient goes, oh my goodness, that sounds terrible. How amazing would it be if the doctor was able to say, you know what, let's talk about some breath work.
Absolutely.
Have you thought about doing this before? Here, let's try it together. But that never happens. Then maybe they end up in my office, which I'm so grateful for. And then when I say something like that, they either look at me like they're so glad that they're there, or they look at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
And then I sometimes think like, oh, are they going to leave here and never want to see me again? Also, okay. But the point is, by the time they see me, they've often seen many other people before. And they've tried all kinds of different medications, and they've been given all of these diagnoses that sound awful, and they're told they're going to have to manage it their whole lives, and there's no cure or something like that. And then we get right down to basics, like how much are you moving? What are you doing with your breathing?
And how much water are you drinking?
How much water are you drinking?
Exactly. Yeah. Throughout the breathing, just quickly, we forgot how to breathe through the nose. This is something what is crucial. We forgot. The nose is made for breathing. And like Heather said, so stimulating parasympathetic nervous system, it's coming actually through the nose. Breathing through the nose, we're stimulating vagus nerve, who is actually relaxing the breathing and the heart rate. 80% we're getting that feeling from the nose, only 20% from the mouth. Right. So this is something what people are not familiar with. Breath holds, amazing, spleen, diaphragm, breathing 360, like using stomach, chest, intercostal muscles. This is what, there's a lot of things behind what we actually forgot, what we did before. If you see the baby, how they're breathing, that's it. How babies squat, actually toddlers squat, this is how we need to squat. But we, during the life, we're losing all that.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I'm managing my sugar intake.
Yes.
Relate sugar and insulin resistance to PCOS and PMS and...
Yeah, great topic. This is one of my favorite topics. Yeah, so when we consume something that is sugary or very starchy, something that liberates glucose very quickly into the bloodstream, we have to release a lot of insulin to get that glucose into the cell. And if we don't produce enough insulin, then we can't get the glucose into the cell and we feel... like we haven't eaten or we feel tired. Now, what happens when people are ritualistically or routinely exposed to too much glucose, whether it's from sweets or desserts or whether it's from, you know, bread or pasta or whatever, is that the body can only tolerate a certain amount of insulin at a time. So if the body is continuously having to produce a lot of insulin, the cells don't want to see all the insulin, so they start refusing to read the insulin. Then what happens is the person has eaten. All of the insulin makes the sugar go into the cell very quickly, but because the cell has been a bit resistant, the insulin comes in one big rush. So the sugar goes into the cell in one big rush. So they get the sugar into the cell, they feel good, but then they get the big crash afterwards where their blood sugar drops very low. And then what happens... they crave the sugar again. And then they're in this loop, continuous loop.
Yep.
Insulin also follows cortisol. The two of those are paired. So when insulin is too high, often cortisol is too high, and vice versa. When we're under a lot of stress, often people can relate to this experience of going through something stressful and then they crave sugar. Mm-hmm. That's because when their cortisol levels go up, insulin goes up, blood sugar goes down, and then they feel like they need to feed themselves. Oh, I stress eat.
Yes.
I want to fill my stomach when my cortisol levels are high because my blood sugar has gone low. But the more I do that, the more I train this hyperactive insulin response, and then we become insulin resistant.
Yep, very common thing. Sometimes people are coming. By the way, I did my biomass as a professional athlete. No one didn't tell me that I was taking like one bar before the match, 20 minutes before the match and warm up. And the game will start, I will crash.
Yep.
My focus lost. I'm feeling nauseous at the beginning of the game when I need to be the focus the most. So it's happening same with the people, like when coming with the protein bars, anything, you know, I said, after 20 minutes, you'll not feel well. Don't be surprised.
He yelled at me 3 days ago for doing that. I got to the training. I hadn't eaten all day and just had a protein bar. I was taking a bite and I saw Ivan and he went, 20 minutes. Okay.
Oh my goodness, did he food shame you? It's terrible.
We were alone in the gym, so they talked.
I am not perfect. I like this one.
Yeah, definitely.
One tip for, one of the 35 tips for women over 35 to live. I am not perfect. Mm. Yep. It's a big realization when we get...
And that's okay, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, totally, totally.
But men are not perfect. So that's not talking about women, of course.
Oh my God, I hadn't noticed.
Since when?
You're kidding.
And this also I love. I am a good listener.
Yeah.
I am a good listener and I have a best friend. I respect others. I respect those who are older than me. I like to help others. I love my family. I like all these.
It's kind of,
you don't think about these things as main components for wellness.
Sure.
But they sure are.
Yeah.
Part of the well-being.
Mm. Yeah. You need to have a best friend. And you need to not only... fill their ears, but you also need to be a good listener.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It is skill, I think. It's a big skill also, like it is possible to learn.
Which leads us, we don't have time to talk about that. Maybe we can sit together again another time. Yeah. Empathy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Empathy is the big one to maintain bonds between people. People who know each other and people who don't know each other. If you don't feel empathy towards other human beings,
I agree. That's a big
then
subject.
Everything that we have talked about actually gets thrown away, because you can't be mentally healthy if you don't feel with fellow human beings.
Yeah, you're missing part of your own humanity. You're missing out on what, to a certain degree, what it feels like to just be human, right?
Yeah, I agree.
No man is an island.
No.
Yeah.
No woman is an island.
That's actually one of the first things I noticed about Ivan when we started training together, is that he just had a lot of emotional intelligence. He could really read me. Mm. And that is empathy, right? He wasn't there to just train me. He was there to understand what I was going through and why I was feeling the way I was feeling, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was
lovely.
So short.
Yeah.
Yes. We should do it again.
Yeah,
the producer is shaking her head. It wasn't short.
Well, I was like, please stop.
Well, hopefully we will get another time, another sit down together and we can talk.
It was amazing.
There's so much to cover and we really barely scratched the surface on all these issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sibyl.
Thank you both. Thank you.
Pleasure.